There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, everybody, before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, if you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports and live for the short-term gratifications of DFS, then you have to try out Weekly Fantasy Sports WFS on Owner's Box. Head on over to rotoballer.com/box and sign up today. Weekly Fantasy Sports is the best of daily and season-long. It keeps you engaged through live drafting and new multi-week games. Owner's Box will also be paying out users who bring their friends on board. Watch the real money rewards pile up through their first ever three-tiered referral system. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. But that's not it. Owner's Box will be matching your first-time deposit of up to $500 for any depositors through January 4th. Just head on over to www.rotoballer.com/box and sign up today to claim your $500 bonus and join the new wave of weekly fantasy sports. Now, to this episode of Benched with Bubba. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 346. We got two guests tonight to recap some fantasy news, talk about the, I say it wrong every time, the partners draft, the team draft, NFBC draft that Matty Wood put together, talk some strategy with that and so much more. But we'll start with the lady of the night. You can find her on Twitter at JennyButler830. Jenny, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good. I'm looking forward to it. We chatted a little before this, but I've been following you for a little while, and I've been hearing you on shows. I'm like, I need to get Jenny on the show. So then when I sent the message, Rob was all excited. I'm like, okay, let's get Jenny on too, because it'll be perfect. And speaking of that, you can find him on Twitter at DeadPullHitter and the Pull Hitter Pod. Rob DiPietro, welcome back.
Hey, Bubba, Jenny, how are you doing tonight? Thank you for having me back. This is great. I feel like it's my second time on your show. Jenny's been on my show twice, so, and now you have us together, and we just did a tag team, so a lot of twos going on right now. But thanks for having me, Bubba. I love the show. I love you. You're the best. You know, we always talk, and yeah, you're the man. So I love being here with you. It's a great time.
Now I'm looking forward to it. Jenny, since I probably butchered it, what was the title of the league? Is it a partner league, a tag team league? What was it?
It is the tag team league.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like WWF. Good. Okay, yeah. That's what I was hoping for. Because, well, some of the personalities in there was like WWF. So it definitely fits in. Like old school 80s and 90s WWF. But before we get into all that, first, Jenny, just let everybody know that somehow doesn't know who you are. Like, what do you – you're an NFBC player. A little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I kind of backed my way into this podcasting thing. But for the most part, I'm just a normal high-stakes player. I started playing in the NFBC. Well, I started playing in the basketball version of the NFBC around 2013 or 14. And then I started playing in a couple of OCs and things like that in 15, 16. And then I got into the main event in 2017. I just wanted to kind of get away from the home league a little bit and see how I stack up against other people. And it was just so much fun. I've been out in Vegas every year for the main event, and I'm hooked. So I get a little more degenerate every year.
I love it. That's what we all are. That's why I named my little side project website Fantasy Degens, because that's what we are. Like, some people think it's a bad name, but it's true. It's what we are, so it's good. And I've been enjoying getting to know you on this, and I agree. It's like you dip your toe in the water, and then you want more, then you want more, then you want more. So we'll see where that goes. But Rob, everybody knows who you are, but if you want to plug your stuff, go for it.
Oh, yes. You know, you can find me on Twitter at DeadPullHitter. I'm the host of the Pull Hitter podcast. I just went through my first tournament bracket that Chris at Baseball Pods is holding. That was awesome. Played at Fantasy and Frames. Real good guys. Sucks we couldn't both advance, but it's cool because it really brought me into the industry last year, just like getting to know everyone through listening to them. So now getting to know everyone through talking to them on my own podcast or their own, it's fun and it's great. So yeah, just, doing some drafts, joining some main events as I did today. I'm going to New York and I'm drafting live. So I'm pretty excited. So I'm not too far away. It's about 40 miles. So that's what I'm doing, Bubba.
Looking forward to hearing how that goes for both of you. Jenny's going to Vegas. Yes. Rob going to New York. It's going to be fun to hear, not even just the drafting. Like you guys both said, I just want to go hang out with people. And that, like, just the story is about being able to do that because, you know, we didn't get first pitch Arizona, any of that kind of stuff. So it'll be fun to get those stories. But before we get into the tag team draft, let's cover a couple pieces of recent news. And some of it's, you know, serious, some of it's not. But you know, the Mariners, they know the accusations that were said by their former piece of the front office there. But Jared Klinik, he's already spoken out about how he's getting screwed over, basically. And ever since then, I've heard on a lot of shows, people are like hyped to actually pick him because they think he's going to come up sooner now. We'll start with you, Jenny. Are you interested in taking the chance on Jared Klinik in like these high stakes drafts?
No, but it's not, doesn't have anything to do with his particular situation. I just don't really draft rookies. I don't like to stash anyone if I can help it. I try to have a full bench at all times, but it's an interesting situation because, you know, if you're ever going to do it, we've never really had these assurances that somebody's going to come up at least by the end of April before. So it's an interesting scenario that is tempting. Maybe I'll get in on it in a league, you know, with a deeper bench, you know, a best ball or something like that. But I don't generally stash rookies.
Yeah. What about you, Rob? He's going around pick 220 right now. He's gone as high as 192 in the month of February. So what say you on this one?
I have through the draft champions, the draft and hold format on NFBC, I have zero shares of him. Passing at him, like I've been passing on him every opportunity I have to. And I know our good friend at Draft Champion Pod, Zach Roto, he's a big fan. You know, he pretty much grabbing him in every draft I see, which is fine, like because I do feel like, you know, you will get your Tatis type call-ups and your Pete Alonso type call-ups, but my experience in the last year playing, you know, the higher stakes leagues, I'm not going that route. Say, you know, keeper league, dynasty league, sure, but high stakes league, draft champions, where, you know, because that's the thing, right? Like guys, like, and he can get called up, but if he doesn't play well, that, you know, is he going to go back down, right? So he's got to come up, play well, and then give enough, you know, time and to get, you know, to start tallying up stats if he comes up in June or whatever. And like Jenny said, I want my full bench. I learned that when we prepped a draft and I asked her, it was a simple one of the bullet points, you know, what do you feel about prospects? I don't draft them. You know, I was like, okay, cool. So I feel the same way.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how I am. It's like, there's times to take risk in drafts. And then this is a different type of risk to me because you mentioned, what if he gets called up and starts out slow? What if he starts out slow in the minors? And right, then they have an excuse to be like, hey, he needs another month or two. Now you're in a big hole. So it's one of those, is if you really like him, maybe take the chance and fab later on. But I probably won't be drafting him. It's tough because you need those bench spots. And it's just one of those deals. And you never know what the Mariners are going to do. They have a lot of options if something goes wrong. Let's go to the New York Yankees. Aaron Hicks is a guy that I seem to draft yearly and pay the price because he gets injured yearly. But when he's on the field, it's pretty awesome. That's the tough part. He's pretty solid. And he came out and said he's actually feels 100% finally from TJ surgery. Last year, he was still kind of feeling the effects. He's going around pick 285 right now, and he hits in the middle of that Yankees lineup. Rob, does he have any interest in a guy like Aaron Hicks?
I don't. I was aboard the Hicks train a couple of years ago when I was feeling that resurgence, but I just don't feel the saying that he could hit 30. He'd only hit 27. That was his high. And just this whole situation, I think, where teams are going to be, you know, cycling through players and resting guys and making sure everyone stays healthy, and a guy with an injury past, I don't believe just now all of a sudden gets more at bat than ever. So I have zero desire to try to get on to Aaron Hicks.
What about you, Jenny?
I'll probably draft him a couple places. I generally try to spread my risk around. So I'll get him in a couple places, you know, just in case he breaks out. Well, he's maybe already broken out. I don't know how you qualify that. But, you know, I mean, if he says he wants to hit 30, like, okay, cool. Like, everybody should want to hit at least 30.
Exactly. You know? I hope he wants to hit 30.
But, you know, just as recently as December, he was saying that his arm was still bothering him. So he's all of a sudden perfectly good to go now in February. And last year he said he had to modify his swing because his arm was bothering him. So I would like to see him get back into his normal rhythm before I'd be willing to put too much into him.
Yeah, totally understandable. Let's have the fun game real quick. I'll go Jimmy first and Rob. Who plays more games for the Yankees, Hicks, Stanton, or Judge?
I'm going to go Judge.
I guess I'm going to go Hicks, but that's just mostly because of the other two.
It's how low do you want to go?
It's a crazy predicament they have, but it's I guess it's a good one. It's a wealth of luxury, I guess. But let's go to the Reds, and Jenny, being the Reds fan, might have a stronger opinion than others on this one way or the other. So I'm really looking forward to this because everyone loves Nick Senzel as a prospect, but it's been like we've been waiting and waiting. So I can only imagine what the Reds fans are thinking. Well, he's supposedly healthy now, and David Bell comes out and says he's going to play every day, which is kind of curious because you have Shogo and you have Winker. So there's only so many – it's not softball. There's not four outfielders. So it gets curious. What's your thoughts on this? Like, what are you hearing about Nick Senzel?
I mean, they want to start him out as a starting center fielder, great. I don't have a lot of confidence that he's going to make it very long before he gets hurt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had such a promising season in 2019. It just looked so good in the shorter sample size that it was. But, you know, when you look at the Statcast page for that year, it's just solid blue. And I'm too scared. I'll probably, like I said, with Hicks, get a share or two. I think I've already gotten one just because that's kind of how it fell. But I'm not really that interested. I'm more of I'm investing more for sure in Winker and Shogo Akiyama.
Okay. Good to hear. What about you, Rob? You interested in Nick Senzel? He's going to pick 279 right now.
Yeah. It's an interesting ADP. I think that it's one of those fine lines, I think, with him. I don't believe in the health at all. And it's just, you know, it's just constantly, I think right now for draft champions, I'm just trying to kill him with volume and he's never been there. So now I got to try to shift my brain to a shorter season. And do I trust the 530 plate appearance, you know, projections I see on some projections, I don't know, you know, and even if you kind of adjust, you know, try to play with his plate appearances, it's still hard for me to get on board. I think they might start, you know, trying some crazy stuff like, you know, maybe try Suarez at short. I heard that. I heard that Aquino doesn't have any more options, so he's going to be there. So it's interesting. It just seems like way too many guys too on top of the injury risk. So again, I'm just going back to the thing with Hicks. It's like, I think that guys are going to be overmanaged this year and I just don't see, you know, the banking on his, you know, playing more than 145 games, you know, definitely not.
Yeah, the projections have Senzel for like a potential 2020 type deal, which is like you look at that going, oh, that looks pretty nice. But yeah, health and playing time is interesting. Ginny, you mentioned Shogo. He's going to pick 359, and you got Winker at 211. So Winker's going about 60 picks ahead of Senzel. Winker even came out today, and he kind of got offended and said, I'm not a DH. I'm an outfielder. Like he made a point to people. So, like, what you said, you'd rather take your chances on them. Like, how aggressive would you be? Because it still feels like there's going to be some sort of platoon going on.
Well, I'm not going to be as aggressive on Shogo as I had been before this, I think, because I was envisioning that there could be a platoon and that Shogo might kind of take over when Senzel either struggles or gets hurt. But Winker, I think in general, all of them, Senzel included, you know, if they are playing well, they'll play. There's a pretty good chance that not all four of them are going to be healthy and playing well all at the same time after the start of the season. So, you know, I think it'll work itself out. And I have confidence in Winker's skills. And I like Shogo for where he's going. I think that he can provide some value for where he's going.
Yeah, he's an OBP machine. So that's intriguing. Like the way he finished the short season was pretty good to see. So we'll see how that goes. I'd love to see Winker get every day at bats.
We know the one constant, and that's Casty. Big old Casty.
Yes.
Unfortunately, in the outfield, yes. But yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait. And our buddy Derek Rose, he says he's with Jenny. He's on the Shogo train. I know he is because he drafts in best ball, and he wants that OBP. So we've established that one. Rob, Kevin Cash of the Tampa Bay Rays, it's, you know, we hear the best shape of your life everywhere we turn right now, but Austin Meadows is apparently looking great after last year's just dud. He had COVID. A lot of things weren't going well, but apparently he's just like knocking the socks off everybody. And he's owner on pick 95, which, you know, a year or so ago was much higher than that. Are you in on Austin Meadows this year?
I'm like, for where he's going, I'm starting to give him more and more of a look. And it's interesting on Ron Chandler's Babs.
Oh,
and we lost Rob, Mr. Technical Difficulties. So while we're waiting for him to come back, Jenny, where do you stand on Austin Meadows? I'm kind of agreeing with where he was going.
Yeah, I like Austin Meadows. And I was going to give Rob some shit just now because I, throughout the tag team draft, I was saying, everyone, you know, get to that point, you know, we could do take Meadows. Yeah. I'm all aboard. So I liked him the last couple years. He broke out in 2019, and I was all in on him last year. And I think he just had a really unfortunate situation last year between COVID. He had an oblique strain. You know, it just all piled on. And I've liked him for a while as a four to five category player. And, you know, he's going at, you know, what, the 7-8 turn in a 15-teamer? Sign me up.
Yeah, no, that's kind of where I'm going. I didn't want him like last year when he was going so high around about 35, 40. I'm like, you know, there's so much more I want at that point in time, like a second pitcher or something. But now it's much more appealing, like you're saying. Rob, would you like to finish what you were saying about Austin Meadows?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say in my Ron Chandler's Babs ranking, he did a bucket with some guys that's quite interesting, like guys going way ahead of him. And that power average combo could be pretty solid for you. And I think it seems like with the health too, he was just really passive last year. He was a lot of called strikeouts, a lot of not swinging. So, you know, I know I was weary about him last year at his price because his skills seemed to get like a little, I don't know. They weren't as strong as I thought they should be for a surface stats. And so coming into last year's draft, I wasn't really drafting him at his price, but I think he's going at a spot right now where it could be pretty profitable for your team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had a question for you, Rob. And I love HQ. I love Babs. I love everything about it. How much do they pay you? I'm kidding. Yeah. I know. I'm kidding.
Proof is in the pudding, you know?
I know. I'm kidding. I love it. I think it seems like you can't go more than 5 minutes without HQ quotes somewhere along the lines. It's beautiful.
It's a really simple system. It made me just like able to just do a lot more in depth work, you know, by identifying certain skills. And I just immediately say, all right, I'm going to concentrate on these like 80, 100 guys every year. And, you know, at that point of the year, and I don't know, it made my process a lot tighter.
Yeah, between Babs and the Mayberry method, I think it makes fantasy so much easier for people if they want to just accept it. Like, it's pretty cool stuff. Jenny, the Mets manager, Mel Rojas, is saying that Edwin Diaz should get most of the saves. And as messy as the – and that's why Rob's going second here because he's the Mets fan. But as messy as the closing landscape is already, Edwin was kind of penciled in as like maybe that fifth or sixth closer coming off the board. He felt pretty good about where things were going. They have a lot of options if things go wrong. So where do you are you still thinking he's worth the fifth or sixth closer? Or are you concerned now?
I think I'll still take him there. I mean, I think if you honestly ask almost any manager right now, they'll say our guy is pretty much the closer. And then there's always going to be situations where other guys come in to close. So I don't think it's that concerning. I'm a little bit wary of Diaz in general. And there's not really a great reason for it other than he's lost his job before. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit scared in that respect, but I think he still belongs in that group. I mean, I know that Rob was high on him when we were getting ready for our tag team draft, so I know where he's going.
All right, Mr. New York Met, what's your thoughts on this whole he should get all the saves?
Oh, man, it's, you know, it's some line, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a very interesting line. But that's – he should, right? I mean, it's
yeah, in theory.
You know, better than saying you won't.
It's not the lie. The statement's not a lie.
And maybe he's saying right. The Mets are going to win so many games, he can't physically pitch all the save situations.
Right. He can't get 56. He can't get in the 50s again, but maybe 35. I love him. I think I'm not afraid to take him as, I don't know, second, third closer off the board. The skills are just so off the charts. I think last year kind of got blown out of context a little bit. Like he gave up one game winning homer, and the next game it was a tying homer. But then after that, he was just pretty lights out. I mean, from in August, September, he had 23 innings pitched with microscopic whips and ERAs and 17.5 K9, and he was so good that they put Lugo back to starter. And I think the big thing too, like what told me a lot of the story was that. I know they brought in May, but, you know, May's got 7 career saves. So I think he's just there to, sprinkle it in, like get some shots when Diaz can't go or if there's a week where he just can't find his control. But I think it's going to be there. I think the telltale, too, is the fact that they are not afraid to spend money. They've shown they were in on Bauer and they were, quote unquote, rumored to be in with Melanson in hands, right? And they could have had him if they wanted him for 10 mil, like, especially the Rosenthal. I thought after the non-signing of Bauer, they were going to try to make a splash again. And I feel like they could have brought him on. But reading in between the lines, like Rosenthal was happy with the fact that the A's were going to let him close. So to me, that tells me, right, in the discussions with the Mets, they said, hey, you know, you're not going to be the guy. And that maybe didn't, like, why Hand didn't go to New York even to just be the second guy. So I'm going with that context, strong. I'm gonna probably die on that hill this year, but I'm willing to.
Yeah, Rob, read him between the tea leaves there. That's that's pretty bold. Second or third off the board. Like you, if you want him, he's gonna be yours then. I'm gonna tell you that much now.
I was listening to some awesome bullpen pods recently too. Greg Jewett, I've heard him on so many different pods, and I think Eno also brought up like the they both mentioned like the contract thing. Yeah. And the contract thing, the closer signing big contract things. And it's just a thing. It just happened. There was a majority of those first years aren't really great. But so for Hendricks, there's some concern there. And Hader, I love Hader too, but I think it's one of those picks where you feel strong about your guy and you just throw ADP aside and say, how far of the range of outcomes can it be that, Diaz has more saves than both of them. It's not so unreasonable.
Yeah, I don't hate it at all. I love the dedication to your guy. That's beautiful.
When he got taken right before us in the fifth round of the tag team, that was one of the biggest reactions I got out of Rob. There was a big F-bomb dropped right there.
Well, that's why I would have loved like your guys' live feed. There's a few others, but Rob keeps it relatively clean on his show. But I know if you're a Jersey/New Yorker, like with that accent, there's no way the F-bomb doesn't just flow off the tongue. Like that's just part of the vocabulary. You're a former construction worker and stuff, or what? Like, yes. Right? Yeah. So right. Yeah,
100%.
I'm pretty sure that's like
checking
that's
all hard, those boxes.
Like that's we were talking about it in the chat the other day. It's like when I'm off the podcast, I could be a sailor in 2 seconds. So it's really not a complicated thing. Like, I try to keep it as PC as possible, but right. if it flies, it flies. All right, so let's get into this. You kind of hit it at it, Jenny. The tag team draft. This is a fun concept. Maddie Wood put it together. I believe it was 15 teams, correct?
Yeah.
15 tag teams. So 30 people involved, $500 entry. Pretty cool concept. It already sounds like more people want it next year, so you might have a few more leagues, which will be cool. Jenny, have you ever partnered with someone before?
No, I've never done it before. It was interesting. I just thought, you know, I want to try it. I've never done it before. And, you know, I just want to see what it's like to pick along with somebody else. I don't have that experience. So, no, it was an interesting new way to go. But thankfully, Rob and I, we didn't know it going in necessarily, but we had a lot of the same opinions. So that helped a lot. We weren't fighting or anything.
Yeah. That helps a ton because that's one thing I'm scared of about partnering is – I'm not like I can be an asshole if I need to be. Like I don't plan on it, but it just kind of happens. And so it's I like my way sometimes, and I get in trouble for that. But how did you end up being partnered with this guy?
I asked him if he wanted a partner. I saw Matt put the tweet out, and I thought, well, who would I want to partner with? And so I thought about Rob, and I asked him if he wanted to do it. And at first he said, I've got too many leagues. And then like 5 minutes later in the DM, he's like, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah. Rob wasn't going to do a main event too. So we're here now.
Yeah. We know how that goes.
Yeah. Rob, is this your first partnership?
Yeah. I mean, in the NFBC, 100%. And pretty much for most, even home league ever, anything. Yeah. It was interesting. It was good, and I think it went way. The draft went as very smooth for us because we put in a good solid phone call the prior day, and we ran through a whole bunch of things, and we got on Zoom earlier before the draft an hour, and really hit on I think the most important points, and we didn't go. I felt like what was really important is we kind of did the first 10, 15 rounds, where we were safe to go. And then we threw some later names that we wanted to try to get. And even though we didn't get a couple of guys we tried to, I felt like we didn't try to plan too much, just enough. I felt like, because I think there's a point where you can overdo, and just maybe scan over the first 10 rounds. We should really just be doing the majority of the pre-draft in those rounds. So it was awesome.
Well,
yeah.
Well, a big time NFBC player, Mr. Fish, he said you guys have a pretty good team. So you could run with that. Jenny, Rob can't hear you right now. What concerns did you have teaming up with anybody in general? What concerns going into it did you think is going to make this complicated?
I just was afraid that the draft was going to be chaotic. I mean, not only was it my first team draft, it was also my first fast draft of the season. So I was just really getting worried that the clock was going to be ticking. We were going to be going, oh my God, what do we do? What do we do? And just clicking a button in panic and then regretting it 2 minutes later. And that really didn't happen. And I think that our preparation ahead of time helped a lot because we went through, like Rob said, the first 10 or 15 rounds. But I think that one of the things that we learned from it was, we would get down to round 7, 8, 9 and say, oh, well, we can take this here. Or, oh, I'm really not liking how this is going down here. Maybe we should change what we just thought we were going to do up in round 4 or 5, catchers and closers and things like that. It was oh, let's not take a catcher too early. Oh, well, wait, maybe, when we start looking down further, maybe we should go back and revisit what we thought in the earlier rounds. So I think that the planning really helped a lot.
It did.
It definitely helped a lot. And Jenny was mentioning, it's funny because when I was talking to some people. I even asked Clay Link and James Anderson on my show, like, you know, how they do it. And so I was trying to, you know, gauge information. I know Dave McDonald and his, you know, and his partner Tony, and he always talks about it on his podcast a lot. So I was trying to, you know, pick like what, you know, what I thought would make a good, you know, tag team partner. But then, like, honestly, when you sit down and you talk about it, like, it really flowed so naturally. Like, we, and it's so crazy because Jenny, like, does like an SGP style evaluation. And I learned myself this year on SGP and I like it, but, you know, I still use my bad, but it's interesting how we landed on the same kind of guys using mm-hmm. like different evaluation systems. So it was pretty cool to see how it could work so well. And so just the fact that Jenny was on a lot of the guys that I was on, it felt, you know, and out on the same guy that I was out. It was pretty cool. It was rather awesome.
So for the two of you kind of teaming up, obviously, and seeming like you're on the same page, which is awesome. Like, Jenny, are you usually a pitcher early person, or do you wait? Did you guys deviate at all from your normal game plan, or did you guys kind of do the same thing as usual?
No, we ended up pretty much doing what I would normally do. So I've been an early pitching drafter for several years now, and I'm actually kind of bummed that it seems like everybody else is jumping on the train now. I wasn't always like a pocket aces person, but, you know, two out of the first three, at worst, two out of the first four, something like that. The only thing that, you know, was a little bit off from what I would normally do is like Luis Robert. But I think mm-hmm. that was true for both of us. We kind of were thinking, you know, we were looking at it and thinking, let's just do it. Let's just like take a risk and do it. And, you know, I don't think it was totally comfortable for either one of us, but we were on the same page about it. So that made it a lot easier.
Yeah.
That helps. Yeah. I think what made me uncomfortable was that, like, we didn't expect him to be there. So when mm-hmm. we went through our, like, you know, our bullet point at each round, we didn't write him down. You mm-hmm. know, I thought he was going to be gone 100%. And when he was there, that's what I think the hesitation in my brain was, like, you know, I think we were discussing Starlin Marte, you know, like your, you know, patented quote, Bubba, like the steady Eddie, right? You know, yeah. The guys who just built my base of my teams for years. But, the clock was ticking and we was like, let's just go for this home run. Yeah. Like, we have this great start. And speaking of the clock was ticking, I know Jenny mentioned, you know, how we didn't even have late picks. There was some questionable, really questionable clock issues. they had to back out about five or six picks. Everyone was saying in the comments,
Can we mention whose teams by chance?
They backed out of Siege. They backed out of Vogel, yeah. I think. And I think they backed out, I forget the other team. But it happened way too often. And I was like, come on, man. Don't get your pick in under five, you know, put it in on, like, right at 40. Like, come on. You prepped for the draft. You should know who you want.
Oh, that's great.
I think some teams were having a lot harder time choosing than we were mm-hmm. for sure. Well, I listened to the SP streamer. I think it was, him.
Yeah, and Matt.
And I listened to Govier talk on the live stream about it. And there were some times that there were some other teams that were choosing right up till the end.
Well, that's part of why I wanted to talk to you guys about it, because I could see, like, I could get along perfectly. Like, Scott Jensen is the nicest human being ever meet, and he knows he will have trouble drafting with someone else because right. he's like stuck in his way. Where I kind of feel the same way, so I could see like going, "Hey, we got 30 seconds. We're gonna talk about this some more." And then all of a sudden, you're like, "Oh crap! We're in trouble now. Like, push the button." So that's one of the things that I guess you guys lucked out on a big way. Did you guys? Was there a point in the draft where you guys came close to?
There was some. You know, there was
probably first, a few.
The first big one was like Lo Kane and like Victor Reyes.
Who won?
I talked him into Lo Kane.
Jenny, yeah. Yes. Jenny, well, you know, and, you know, listen, like, again, it was one of the first instances where, you know, it was like, it was a couple of things. And we were debating quickly in that, you know, 40 seconds, you know, time frame that we had to really want to get a pick in. And it was crazy how, like, when the pressure's there and everything went so well. And that's the thing. Everything was going smooth. So there's no, like, frame of indexes where, like, this could be a panic pick or anything. And we talked it out, like, and, you know, and it was great. You know, I was trying to go for the – fact that Reyes wouldn't be affected by the playing time, by, you know, the recent signings of Azara, Grossman, and Jenny was like, you know, I think Will King's just going to come back and do it, you know. And it was like one guy just wasn't eyeing, you know, at all year. But at the point where we just like needed one of those solid hit tool guys with some steals, you know, I was like, you know what, this won't be the worst pick, and I like it, you know. So you just go with it, you know. Like it wasn't a, like, if it was a guy, I felt like, wow, this is no chance I would pick it. Maybe I would have pushed it even harder, but Lokane was in the moment, it made sense. Jenny pitched it perfectly, and I was like, okay, I'm in, let's do it.
I think it helped that neither of us were too strong-willed, and we also, right. I think we're both willing to let the other person, like if I had said Lokane, he just absolutely vetoed it, I would have just moved on. It's not mm-hmm. like I wasn't so strong about it that I was going to die on that hill. But it's interesting, you know, now that we're sharing a team, you know, there's a few picks in every draft that are going to be like the one I pushed for, the one he pushed for. And now it's going to be like, oh, my guy's the one that blew it, and his guy's the one that, you know, kicked ass. And, you know, that's going to be interesting.
I'm making an on-air promise that I will never say we should have picked that guy. I'm not going to be that guy.
I couldn't do that because I won't remember what our choices were. Yeah. So
you only have 30 other leagues. It's going to be tough to figure that one out. So, Jenny, obviously it sounds like things went pretty flawless for the most part, pretty smooth, I would say. Is there anything you would do differently, like to make it – it doesn't sound like you could do a whole lot more, but was there anything differently you would do now that you've done one draft with a partner for the next time?
Yeah, not so much with the partner situation. I think we did pretty well with that. You know, when I just look back at our team, you know, I think we ended up – you know, we took the pocket aces right off the bat. We took – Corbin as our third, which we both felt good about, but is a risk. And then we didn't get a fourth until the 20th round. And I think looking back on it, I might have wanted to dip back in a little sooner, you know, just to get a little more stability there. But, you know, with the top two guys that we have, I feel good about, you know, I feel good about our closers. And, you know, I think we just need to be, you know, on top of the starting pitcher free agents and jump on them when we think we find a good one.
Well, speaking of that, then when you're in season managing, who's in charge of Fab?
We haven't talked about it yet.
Yeah, we haven't discussed it.
Just basking in the glory of your team right now.
Well, I like the first time I had Jenny on my podcast, she, you know, I still have it in my head where she's like, she carries around like a sheet of people, and she writes down when she listens to podcasts, whatever, and she writes this play down, and she just, you know, knows for Fab like who she wants. So I feel like with that plus just like, yeah, just, you know, we'll throw some guys into the watch column, and you know, hopefully we'll set a time where we're like, all right, you know, what do we need to do, what do we need to drop, like yeah, how can we add? And we'll look at that, you know, that watch column, and just try to make the best bid from there. I think it's funny because, like, having the same likes in the draft, I feel like we won't have problems with the players, but more like what's the amount, you know? Like, yeah. Is it 3 or 54?
Yeah.
You know, I think that'll be the biggest, you know, problem with Fab.
And I think that that's a little bit of a learning curve too. I mean, like, right. I know that from my experiences in the main event, I've gotten a little better every year at judging what a guy should go for. So, you know, the way I'm kind of envisioning it is we talk about everything, you know, the free agents and the lineup setting, but maybe one of us is more in charge as far as like the deadline goes of getting the free agent picks in. And maybe one of us is in charge of getting the starting lineup in, just to kind of have somebody who's, you know, really on top of it, and you're not saying, oh, I thought you were going to do it this week or something like that, and missing out somehow.
Starting lineups? What do you mean? Shame. I thought this was best ball.
No, you're in charge of setting lineups, right?
Another thing we haven't talked about.
No,
we should have did a best ball draft.
Jenny logs in after the first pitch on Monday and goes, Rob, there's three guys that are injured in our roster. What are we doing right now?
Sorry, I was taking a nap.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think Jenny touched on something real quick, Rob, but like when she was saying when we didn't go back to pitching for our fourth starting pitching, and we went, I think it was round 14 when it was either like Hicks or a pitcher, and we just felt really strong on Jordan Hicks. We both really liked him at that spot. So, and we were aggressive in trying to get him. And I think we could have, like, if we would have went like Yarbrough or like maybe another starter there, that could have been a little stronger. But I think we're a little higher than the field on Corbin this year. I just feel like in, you know, those 55 innings, I'm not discounting what he did the 590 before that. So, you know, I like it. I don't think like, I think we went a little risky with Odorizzi and Boyd, but we just felt like it was a if Odorizzi gets signed, it'd be solid, and if Matt Boyd, you know, just finds it a little bit, we could use the K upside. But we miscalculated kind of the end game 300 area. So guys like Dylan Cease and Albert Azoulay, where we were trying to get, who in DC is like 350-ish, 345, they went in like 290. 300. So I think that 40 pick push, we didn't anticipate it being that high. So that's kind of like two guys we were trying to target. And it's why we, you know, reached up a little bit to get a Trevor Rogers type, but because we like missed out on those two high upside arms we were thinking about getting. So if I was thinking that was the biggest surprise in the draft, like Jenny, was the end game where we were like, okay, these numbers are very different, you know? So at one point, it just became throw it out and just take whoever you felt like was good there that you wanted.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds like the Battle of the Pods we did, Rob. We're just like ADP was just way off the board. It was just bananas what was going on in that draft. But, yeah, I was just looking at your roster. I'm a big – like Fish mentioned, I'm drafting 14th in TGFBI, and I wouldn't mind walking away with that when you were as for 13th. So that's a, especially the start, the pocket aces. There's a pitcher I have in mind, and it seems like Rob takes him before me every time. And you guys got him tonight, or in that league. Right. That if he falls to 14, I'm going to be the happiest man on the planet. So right. I don't think he'll be there, but man, if he does, I will thank my entire league.
One other thing, though, if I could just say real quick, that we did on purpose was we put the ends of the draft in as our primary KDS choices. Perfect. Because we thought that drafting as a team, it would be a lot easier to be on the ends, because then you have a longer time to discuss your picks and you can make your picks, you know, as a twofer. And I think that it really did help. We had a nice long time to discuss what we wanted to do next, especially if things like weren't going the way we thought they were going to go. It helps a lot, I think.
That's a great point. That's one thing I was wondering, because, yeah, if you're in the middle, you're kind of watching runs and you have to panic. Do we want to jump on the run? And I've said forever when people talk about KDS is I prefer one of the ends, because if anything, especially like the quote unquote, the bigger the leagues you get into where you kind of you got to get your guys, the whole saying, if you're on the ends, it kind of forces you to go get your guys. Right. Otherwise, it's like 25 picks later before you get or whatever, and you're going to be screwed anyways. So I think that's a good point. And like you said, is you guys could sit there and talk, make your two picks or whatever kind of game plan. And then you have so long to be like, okay, well, we need to hit this on our team or this on our team and kind of start circling four or five guys like a queue, basically. Mm-hmm. But it's just between you guys, which is that makes a ton of sense. It's a good point to make. Jenny, when you're doing this an individual draft, where do you prefer your KDS? You don't have to give all your secrets away, obviously, but where do you prefer it to be?
I generally stay towards the middle, and when I'm drafting by myself, I don't really have a strong preference though. I like to mix it up, you know, like I'm drafting two slow drafts starting on Monday, and I have the first pick in one and the seventh pick in the other. And I think that's nice to have. I like to have a variety, you know, this may be my only chance to get one of the top, like to really have like my choice of guy. And I really don't want to be in the first pick when it gets to the big money leagues. So I like to mix it up early on so I can get a variety of guys.
What about you, Rob?
You know what? I've been going my KDS has mostly been at that, you know, 11 to 13 range that I was speaking of that we landed on too in the tag team and just been targeting the pocket aces from there. I feel like it's a good group of guys that you can get instead of trying to, you know, hope for the second pitcher in the middle of the second round. And I've been preferring to go in the front of the draft too. And I'll go Cole or DeGrom up top. And, you know, it's a middle where I know like a lot of people have and which is cool. It's very sound also. It's like, you know, whoever falls for me isn't isn't a bad pick. It's all safe picks you can get. But sometimes, too, I'm just like, well, I don't want to be left with whoever. You know, I want to make my pick. So I go for that first, you know, first three. I just entered a slow draft cut line last night, and I got the first pick, and I took Tatis. But Giolito and Nola made it back to me, and I was like, wow.
Oh, 10 team leads.
Yeah, 10 my team leads.
That's the – you know, that's the thing. It was such a big difference. And then in my brain, like I was like DMing Phil. I'm like, is this good? Like, did I pick them too early?
Because I got these guys at 2
yeah,
and 3.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, wow, they lasted there. I'm like, yeah. And, you know, ADP showed that they could land there. And I just was it's hard coming out of 15-team drafting hold and then going into the cut line ADP is like, I'm like, really? I'm like, but then, yeah, you just have to, you know, do that thing in your head where it's like, oh, it's 10 guys. And it's just totally different. So, yeah, but. You know, I've been liking the end, but then, you know, we started the turf league here in the eastern tri-state area here to, you know, trying to get in the tradition of the barf league and the nerf league. So we started the turf league, and I drew the second KDS, Matt Williams from turn two. He did it manually, so I had to. The second KDS spot, and the first guy took the eighth pick, and I said, give me number one. Like, that's it. And at TGFBI, I'm right in the middle. So that's the one that's going to test how, yeah. You know, like, that's going to be the different one for me. That's going to be odd one. So I got to get cracking on how I'm going to attack that because I haven't dealt with that yet.
The funny thing is the one that I'm picking first in on Monday is the Glarf, our entry into that whole world. And I actually got the eighth KDS choice and I got the first pick. Like the first pick was my eighth choice and I got the first pick. I've never seen that before. It was crazy.
I think I heard on the Friday RotoWire show with Clay Link and Todd Zola that the KDS for tout draft and hold that starts Monday was kind of like what you just said, Jenny. James Anderson's got the number one pick, but I think he was the eighth or ninth person to pick because, like, everybody else did not want the top pick.
Yep.
So I see both arguments for it. I get, like you said, when you're in the main and stuff, you don't want to be up top. I get both sides of it.
Sorry to interrupt you. Congratulations, man, on getting into Tout Wars. That's freaking awesome, man. That's really cool. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I didn't want to lose that train of thought. That's really cool, man. That's like,
thank you.
It's absolutely such a big thing, and to be a part of it, that's awesome, man. I'm really proud of you, brother.
Yeah,
appreciate it. Yeah, didn't expect it. Let me put it that way. But something that a couple things Jenny mentioned that I think is fun is one thing I like to talk about a lot with some other people on shows they do is that in the end, fantasy baseball is supposed to be fun. So what Jenny said when she wants like the number one pick, she wants a chance to have like the Cole or the DeGrom or the Acuna or whatever. Because when you're watching baseball, because in the end we're still fans. So when you're watching baseball all year and you see, you know, Acuna went deep 3 times in a game or, you know, DeGrom went 9 and struck out 14, you want a piece of that. Like that's kind of part of it. So that's one thing that's fun is kind of mixing and matching, especially when you do a bunch of leagues. And the second thing is I want to get Jenny's thought on it because she mentioned when she's doing like the main and whatnot, she usually prefers to be kind of in the middle. And I mentioned I like to be on the ends because I like to be able to – it forces me to get my guys. But I think when you're on a live draft, and we kind of talked about it earlier, I think before we even started recording, I think if you're in the middle, it kind of keeps you focused more. I think when we've done barf and we're at a bar to begin with and the drinks are flowing, when you're at the end, you just start kind of wandering off and doing this because there's no time limit and there's just – and then all of a sudden you come back and you see there's been 14 picks made. And you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And at least in the middle, you kind of have to stay. And like you're in tune here. Does that make sense at all, Jenny, for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's also just that, you know, when you're sitting there on the ends, you're just watching all these great players get ticked off before it gets back to you. And it just becomes so painful where at least I feel like if I'm in the middle, I had a shot at all of them if I really had wanted them. And when it's when you're on the ends, you're, you know, unless you're really willing to jump somebody quite a bit, sometimes you're just at the mercy of taking what comes to you. And I don't like feeling like that. So I want to have as much control over my own destiny as possible.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Going back to your guys' team, which I thought, like I said, I think it's a very, very solid team, obviously. Jenny, where do you think is your guys' biggest weakness?
I'm guessing it's going to be, like I said, with the starting pitching. We have some risky guys. I mean, obviously we are super solid up top. I like our closers, but you know, it's David, you know, David Peterson's a risk. Odorizzi's a risk. Boyd is a risk. So I think that they're going to have to hit, you know, for us to do well. And if not, we're going to have to move on and we're going to have to be on top of the free agents. But other than that, you know, I think we did well. We got a lot of position flexibility. We have, you know, we are covered, you know, to be able to move guys around a lot. And I really like our hitters. I like our, we got two strong catchers. We were the ones who jumped in on JT Realmuto, like right after we learned about his broken hand, but we got him in the fourth and I think that's fine. And, you know, we got Austin Nola right after that. And I always like having two strong catchers. So, I'm pretty happy with it. I think we just need to be on top of it, you know, when free agents come around.
The funny thing is that we went in trying to do the strategy, not so much that Team 14 did. They double tap closers in round three and four with Hendricks and Hader. But we
Jeff Zimmerman.
Yeah, we wanted to do Hader or Hendricks. I couldn't get Jenny to take Edwin Diaz that early, but like where we took Realmuto, but like one of them there, and then maybe on the way back, you know, if Diaz landed back to us, we were going to do that or take Presley at that point. Cause we were just really that high on Presley too. So, but then Realmuto was just there, you know, after Jeff took both the closers, was like, all right, well, that strategy went out the window, but we pivoted real quick and real seamlessly. I think one, because JT was there and we were both willing to, you know, absorb anything with the thumb just for the, you know, the benefit of having him over the other catchers. So, and it was just there and we're like, okay, well that didn't happen, but this happened. So mm-hmm. I think that was good that we didn't lose our focus there, but we went in trying to do that. We wanted two top tier closers. And you know, yeah, that got foiled real quick.
Yeah, I think it was so helpful that we were both, like I said, that we're both on the same page because, you know, there are people who would never take JT you know, that early. And luckily we're both on board with that. And when it came up and we opportunity, you know, presented itself, we were both like, yeah, let's do it. And, you know, we didn't have to fight about it, which was nice.
Right. Yeah, he wouldn't have made it to round five for you. So, like, yeah, no, that's the whole thing is you got to take him there or you're not getting him at all. So that makes sense. Do you guys, with the closer chaos we talked about earlier and what Jeff Zimmerman did, that's like as aggressive as you can be on it. But you mentioned how you want to leave with two good closers if you can. How aggressive are you guys usually? Like, obviously, you kind of maybe ditched it a little bit there because it kind of got foiled, like you said. But is it usually a philosophy of yours right now? You want to be aggressive at it?
Yeah, I usually am. I don't always take one of the very, very top ones, but I usually try to get a pretty solid guy, you know, that second tier of guys. And, you know, I've always pushed back against the, you know, don't pay for save strategy. Only because you're going to pay for them. You know, if it's in FAB or your waiver wire or wherever, you know, you're going to pay eventually. And I really don't like paying for closers in FAB if I don't have to. They go for way too much. You have to jump on them before you know for sure that they have the role. Sometimes, you know, a guy will get one save on a Saturday and you have to decide on Sunday whether you're in or out. And, you know, whether you're in or out for $200 and of your FAB. And, you know, I just don't like to be on that train. So I try to keep my closing, you know, the closers as safe as I possibly can.
And we had Presley ranked fifth ahead of Hrinchak and Hand, who went ahead of where we took Presley. Actually, no, they went after we took Presley. But we felt that strong about him, like that he was a top five closer. And I guess the one way we could have double tapped there was in the round we took Castellanos in the fifth round with Du Presley there and Rosenthal in the next round, which we considered as well. But we just both love Castellanos too a lot. So, they, you know, again, that was another quick decision point that we didn't argue about. It was, we both loved him there. And we're like, all right, we'll get the closer in the next round. And then we also, like I said, we feel pretty strong on Hicks. We discussed Hicks or Greg Holland at that point, and we didn't want to go with the old boring guy, and we just went with what we feel like a guy who's going to pitch the ninth inning because of the fact that he's not a like a two-inning guy like Gallegos can be. So we both felt strong that he's going to be the guy in the ninth, no doubt, and return a pretty great profit at that point.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the advantages of being close to the end is that we were able to wait on – we knew we could probably wait on Presley because right after us, you know, Jeff Zimmerman had just double-tapped closers, so we were pretty sure that he wasn't going to go for it. And so we were, you know, we took a chance that, you know, the team Govier on the end wasn't going to do it. But, you know, you get that advantage when you're close to the end.
Right.
No, I like that quite a bit. When looking at the draft board, and you guys obviously were in the room, Jenny, who do you think had the best draft outside of you guys?
I really like Matty Davis's draft. Let's see. I also like Justin and Shelley's draft. The fact that they were able to get Soto first, which I love him, and then Gallen and Flaherty made it back to them on the turn was a pretty sweet deal. And they ended up getting, you know, some really nice picks later on. I definitely don't think they, you know, I think that they were proactive and took what they wanted. So I really like their draft. Rob, you have any? I'm looking.
What about you, Rob?
Oh man, it was.
You're too nice. Don't be too nice, Rob. Go for it. You can pick people.
I feel like I really like what Nick Markham and Aaron Pags did. They just like a nice balanced team. You know, Siege picked a DFS team. Yep. A ton of risk. You know, like
that's what he does.
Yeah, I no, fine. That you know, and there's nothing wrong. Like. At some point in the draft.
I can't stomach that in a draft. I can't.
No.
It wouldn't work for me.
Yeah, hey. No. Right. You know, there's nothing wrong with, like, inheriting some risk. But, you know, for me, it's just too much, you know. Including, like, the Deron Williams, you know, round 10. And that's not just, you know, knock against him drafting him. It's a knock against everyone drafting that early off of 27 innings in the major leagues. But, Zach, too. I love the way I've been involved a lot. Draft with Dak Waxman, and you know he's another high upside guy where he gets in trouble with rostering a little too much risk every now and then. But you know Dave and Tony, they had an interesting route toward pitching. It's a really solid staff. They filled it out with more like volume approach versus like you know guys with high K upside. You know they went with good ratios and
don't talk about Zach Plesac like that. Come on.
No, I'm not talking about Zach. He probably has one of the highest Ks. he's got one of the lowest Ks on the high end, even out of that little bunch. But no, Hemio and Matt Williams, they did a good job. I felt like the way they started off the draft with Bieber, Harper, Merrifield, Lynn, that's like kind of my draft. Like, I feel like if I don't go pocket aces style, like and Diaz, that was a great – Everyone did pretty good.
We were going to take Merrifield in the third there when they took him, and that's how we ended up with Luis Robert because we were going to hope and we assumed that Merrifield would make it to us.
Right.
I'm loving all the Witt love this year because like in recent years people just hate on him and I just love getting him where we do. But you actually have to pay for him this year.
When I was at the live main event draft in 2018, after it's over, everybody walks around and looks at all everybody else's draft boards and stuff. And I had somebody come up to me who he had just introduced himself. I didn't really know him. And he walked up to me and I had drafted Merrifield right after his little breakout. And a lot of people were not on board. And, you know, he said, oh, honey, you should have known better than that.
Oh, my gosh.
And then, you know, he was in my league, and I ended up finishing second in that league and 30th overall with that team. And so last year, 2019, I guess, when I saw him in Vegas, I was like, how's that team? How did you like that team there that I drafted?
You should have said, oh, honey, do you mind if I sit here?
Oh,
but, exactly.
Oh, that would have been so good. Like, see, that's the a-hole in me. I remember those things. I have a, yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't stand people like that. But
everyone had a really good draft, Bob. It's crazy.
Well, that's good.
Like, there's, you know,
there are
like,
a lot of good teams.
Yeah, say Maddie Davis
sharp
room. And then Maddie
I think
Malika,
having two
Fish,
two heads like, in every team was
– Right. You know, worked. There was – Like I said, it was really only two builds that I kind of felt like, okay, this is like you're shooting for it, you know, and you know that's fine if you want to go that route, but everyone else I thought went like real solid approach of you know high upside and risk, so it was a good room to be in.
Let me ask you this: there's always when you're in a room like that where it's really sharp and you're thinking, okay, these guys are going to take my guys and so on and so forth, and then you have like those two teams that you know are just going so off the cuff. How does that make you, like, do you feel like you need to reach more? Or you're like, okay, cool, they're not going to take my guys? Or it's almost like their team can be still very good. I'm not downplaying their team. But it almost feels like it's a free pass because you're like, okay, they're just going to just do their thing over here. And now it's like 13 of us drafting on the same like you.
Well, I was telling you before we started recording that I was in the league with the Rogue Drafter in 2019. And that was, I mean, that ended up being a 14 team league. And we ended up having, I think, four teams that were really high in the overall, including Scott Jensen's team. I didn't have a great team on that season, but like it was, he was just taking guys just out of nowhere, and you just didn't even have to worry about what he was going to do. So mostly I like it. If people don't want the same guys that I want, fantastic.
And I felt like too, like honestly, I think we were really in tune to what Jeff was doing right after us, Jeff and Fred Dinky, because they were right after, like, and we felt like, you know, their roster was getting filled in a different way. So it was most important to determine like who to pick in front of him to see if they came back to us. But honestly, once we picked, it was like, who's in the next queue? Like, we didn't watch who everyone was picking, to be honest. Right. Like, we were entering our guys to cross them off, but we weren't really like roster watching. We were, you know, and I feel like it's another thing about being on the ends. Like, I don't like a big queue. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like sometimes when I put too many people in the queue, I'm like, it gets overburdened. Then I felt like we did a good job on, like, after every pick, we said, who, you know, we just reloaded instead of like having so many after we picked. We really, right, Jenny? Like, I felt like, every time after we picked, we had either like one or two people max left in the queue. Like, we always got our guy. We never just tossed a bunch of guys in there. And it was just, okay, who are we reloading on? And we talk about it. We throw guys in there. And then we'd go back and talk about our team. Like, we weren't really like, you know, roster hounding during the draft.
Yeah, and part of the prep that we did, you know, when we looked at those first 10 rounds, we kind of made ourselves a little queue for each round. You know, after we talked, I kind of put it together in a table and sent it to Rob and was like, here, I think this is what we talked about. And, you know, for each, I grouped them together and picked, you know, two picks together and sort of said, at this turn, we're looking at, you know, these five hitters, these five pitchers, that kind of thing. And, you know, so we kind of had a little prearranged queue that way. Mm-hmm.
Nice. I'm looking forward to seeing how that keeps playing out, because you guys seem so like in tune together, so organized together. I just know in the chaos of a 162 game season, you guys all have so many leagues.
Like, we're mortal enemies by the time this is over.
And that's not what I mean. I think you guys are two very nice people, so I don't see that happening. But I mean, like, there's going to be a week or something where, say, it's like Fabapalooza a couple years ago, when there's like five guys that come up. That's a conversation I'd love to sit in the back and watch. Like, how do you guys approach going after those people with your fab? So that's going to be very entertaining.
Yeah, we'll see.
So before we wrap up the partner, the tag team section of all this, because I'm just intrigued by the whole process. What's your kind of final thoughts on the team, and where do you, I guess we've kind of already talked about where you're going to go from here, but how do you think it's going to plan out for you, Jenny?
I think it's going to be pretty smooth. I mean, I think the one thing I learned, and it was kind of by accident, is that, boy, if I'm on a team with somebody, I really want it to be somebody who drafts the way that I do, because I don't want to fight about it. You know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to fight about something like taking early closers and then I lose the fight and then we're spending all this fab on closers and I'm just frustrated all year. You know, I don't want to deal with that. So, you know, I think I've learned that the two of us work together really well, and that's, you just have to have that. I mean, I can't imagine. It would just be so much more stressful, and it would be fun if you didn't get along. So, you know, I think that, you know, talking it all out and, you know, being willing to listen to the other person and be willing to, you know, be talked into their point of view is key.
What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Fantasy Pros said we're going to win. So,
oh, no. Right. You got the Fantasy Pros curse.
You got the Fantasy Pros curse. A grade, number one
ranked.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You guys might as well start a new draft.
Jeff had DM'd us in the morning, right, with the the picture of that, Jenny, with the finger. Like, it was funny. Like, yeah, you know, I feel good. I think we got some good balance. You know, I think, like Jenny mentioned, like, we're going to have to – if the pitching doesn't pan out on the back end, we're going to have to really just be in tune with – that and make sure and that's the thing. I think we talked about it too, like Matt Boyd, like, you know, and that's why we picked like a guy like Mikolas and Brent Suter, who I think, like, we both felt they're gonna get like a lot of middle innings, especially with the Brewers like really not adding on like I said 100 innings. So we felt like a guy like him is going to come in and eat up a lot of innings, especially early in the season. And so we're like, let's get these middle reliever types who, you know, if we don't want to start Matt Boyd in week one, but he looks great, you know, like we can fill it in with some good ratios and hopefully, you know, he could right the ship and then we can play him when he doesn't hurt our. But I really like the balance that we got. I think we're going to be in good shape to compete. I think, you know, I think we'll be there in the running. Like on, I think the only thing we'll stand in our way is some catastrophic fabbing or just, you know, like Patrick Corbin doesn't give us our third, you know, our really good third anchor that we need for pitching. But I like the power. I like the average. I love the hit tool. Stolen bases. I think we're good all across. We're not like the best in anything, but I think we're good all across.
That can go a long ways. Like I'm one of the people that's torn on Corbin as well. I think I talked about it like on three straight podcasts, just trying to get everybody's opinion on it because it tweaks me. The last question on this, Jenny, doing this with Rob, and you don't have to say with Rob for the future, but do you see yourself wanting to do more tag team drafts in the future?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a really interesting experience. You know, one of the reasons, you know, that I wanted to draft with Rob is because I knew that he used Babs, and we actually are kind of complimenting each other that I'm traditionally been doing SGP and I'm trying to get my, you know, learn more about Babs, and he's the opposite of me. I've been using Babs and trying to get into SGP. And so I was really interested to hear, you know, I said to him going in, like, I want to hear everything that you've got on where, what Babs says about where our team is. And so I think that it's just a really cool way to like get an in and seeing how somebody else drafts. I mean, you can listen to tons of people on podcasts and stuff. Yep. But you never really know what they're thinking until you get in the draft room. So I think it's really interesting to get somebody else's point of view.
What about you, Rob? Do you see yourself doing this again sometime?
I have a small.
He's already doing it again. He's cheating.
That's true.
Already.
That's true. But that person won't be there on draft day. I'm talking about the whole process.
Yeah, no, I would do. Yeah, I would do the whole process again with Jenny, and you know. With someone like Phil that I know on a good level that we trust each other too. Like we don't scream at each other all day at all. Like when we discuss, you know, player evaluations like me and Jenny do. So I would say, yeah, I would do it again. I'd be very selective about it. And maybe SP streamer too, Mike. I think I team up with Mike because we have a same eye for talent too. And we're on the same level. So yeah, I think it's good. I think it's, it gives you like a fresh set of another set of eyes, like Jenny said. And yeah, and it was cool. Like Jenny mentioned, the whole Babs and SGP thing. And it's pretty crazy because we just landed on a lot of the same players that both systems like. So it was sort of a revelation in that way. It's like, oh, like, and just got me deeper into like learning about SGP. Is like, you know, how are we landing on these same players? Like, and so it's pretty cool to get into that and learn more and see things from Jenny's side. And like I said, it was just great that we had so many similar opinions and likes and dislikes. So I would do it again. Yeah, I'm ready to do another draft again. Let's do it, Jenny.
If Brent Suter bombs, then we're through. I'm out.
Damn it.
Your last pick. I love it. That's that's the way we roll. But if anybody's curious what SGP is, because we all know what it is, I did a podcast with Phil Deso last year, and Rob's done a few with Phil, so he explains it to you very well. The robot will teach you everything you need to know about SGP way better than I know I can.
And the process is where I learned it.
Yeah, right. That's a great book. Yeah, Toby uses it all the time, too, when we talk. Two of the better players, you know, and then Jenny also. So three really good players all use SGP plus many more. So
well, that's the thing, you know, right, Bubba? Like I think, and I mentioned it's something that we talked about on when I last time I came on this pod with the New Year's Eve and the resolutions. One of the resolutions I gave you was that I wanted to learn that valuation system because I know that what I'm doing is not going to be the end all like of me being the best it can be. So I want to learn. And, you know, like you said, yeah, Phil, Toby, Jenny, like, and you know, Steve Weimer, you hear like, and then Jeff. And like, it was like, you know, okay, so something's happening here. So let me just see what the approach is. Let me see how that evaluates players. And you just add it to your tool belt. It's like, okay, so this is another thing I know now. And it was cool. It was, it's awesome.
Good to hear. With this group here, the three of us, we've been drafting pretty much since November, December, I would say. I'm pretty confident in that. So we've seen the fluctuations in ADP. Jenny, how are you approaching as you're heading into March to the big drafts, the changes in ADP? Are you like starting to fade guys now that you got earlier at good values? Are you just kind of rolling with the changes in the good or the bad? Like, how do you approach the, we see it yearly. So how do you approach the changes in ADP?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing is pretty predictable. You know, every year as you start to get closer to March and things start to get clearer, you see, you know, the good starting pitchers get pushed up, the top closers get pushed up, you know, the guys who are getting a lot of, you know, sleeper and rookie buzz get pushed up. And, you know, all that's predictable. So ideally you get some of those guys early on and then you can lay off a little bit when it gets closer to start of the season. But even so, you know, if I like those guys, you know, even if guys are getting pushed up, I'm not afraid to take them because, you know, if you take them early, that means that other guys are falling. So, you know, you if you take the ones that you want, leave the ones that you don't, and then round up all the guys that are falling, the safe, boring, older guys later, and, you know, you just make it work. I'm a big believer in, you know, you have to go with what's being given to you. So, you know, if pitchers are going early, I'm willing to take a pitcher early because that's where you, that's the price of getting a good pitcher. And that's just what it is. You know, I can't go to the grocery store and say, I only want to pay 50 cents for this gallon of milk. They don't, you know, that's just not how it works.
You're not leaving.
Price is what it is. So, yeah. You know, if I want them, I'll take them. And I think that it gives you some good opportunities later.
Are you one of the, so you do believe in going pitching or like you said, you'll go with the flow and that's kind of how I am, but you're seeing there's always somebody that has to be like, no, I'm going to be different from the mm-hmm. crew. I can't stomach that. Do you see yourself ever doing that? That just seems so uncomfortable to walk into a draft. I saw someone do it today.
Mm-hmm, and me too.
I don't want to mention the names because it might be rude, but it was like the 11th round was their first pitcher. And I'm like, no.
I just can't. I want to go in with my plan and try to execute it as best I can while still, you know, being flexible to the draft room. I'm not going to change what I'm doing just because of what I see other people doing. You know, it's a great idea to zig when other people zag, but it is hard to make it work. And I don't have the bandwidth to try and like piece that. So you have to just piece it together perfectly. And I don't feel like putting in that kind of effort into trying to figure out exactly how to do it properly.
Yeah, the draft is a puzzle as it is. When you start doing that, it's a Rubik's Cube. So that gets very complicated. Rob, what are you doing with the changes in ADP?
Oh, you know what? It's funny because I just pulled up our good friend Ryan Bloomfield. You know, he has his Bloom board.
Oh, he did put that out today, his Bloom board today.
He just has his little risers and falls. And pulling it up, I noticed, you know, perfect because I could – you know, say three guys that we just, you know, drafted just from this board. So one of them was Jock Peterson. You know, he went from 339 in January to 282 in February. But it was one guy that me and Jenny were real aggressive on. We thought, I mean, not super aggressive. We got him at the end of the 19th round. So right after Dubon, Bubba.
Well done. Well done.
Four lefties to start the season, by the way, if anyone wants a schedule tip. We were aggressive with Jock, and we felt comfortable, like, with that rise. We knew that it was a bat that we wanted. It made sense. We needed, like, some real big thumps. And two guys who fell – actually, sorry. Another riser was Marcus Semien, which actually we even jumped way ahead of, you know.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. We knew, like – it was even to the point where, like, we weren't even concerned if Swanson, like, went. We wanted him, you know, at that turn. And a guy who fell, right? So, Randall Grichuk, January ADP 201, February 247, we got him at 317.
Yeah, and that's hard to pass up at that point.
It's hard to pass up because we were just like, the skills are off the charts, right? And the situation is good. So, okay, fine. Like, if it's not all the time at bat, but still part-time, you know, he's our, you know, our reserve outfielder, you know, to sub in, or fifth outfielder, fine. Like, you know, we'll play that percentage, that trust the bat, trust the skills. And yeah, so it's interesting. I'm definitely not like Jenny said, if you feel comfortable in your evaluation, just go. Like, you know, don't fight the rise, you know. And that's another thing with the early pitching, you know, like, and I've heard, you know, people debate with Toby too on it, you know, like it's funny because the arguments, like, they do the forced zag, right? So they force themselves to, you know, so and they knock people who pick pitchers 1-2 are saying you're walking in with a locked strategy, right? So that's the thing. They're saying, oh, that's a disadvantage for you, you know. But at the same time, now you're coming in now with a predetermined plan. So, you know, like you just did what you said it's not good to do, and you're doing it. You're saying I'm going to go batter to go against me, and now you're not being flexible either. So, you know, who got played? You know, I don't know. Like, if that's the way you feel like you like it, and you know, then you just do it. That's it.
You have to be flexible in a draft, or you're screwed. That's right. Plain and simple.
100%. And there was a couple of possibilities that we noted that we said, okay, this would have to be the ideal way for it to happen, batter first. It's still, even when we listed all possibilities, our stomachs felt better with pitcher. And I just think, you know, there's a big gap of pitchers, and that's why we didn't know when to go back into it, you know, like, and we went back in with Corbin because you don't know when to go back in, you know, and that's why it's good to get those top two and, you know, in our opinion, was instead of to just like run off, you know, guys with low K per nines or, you know, low possible innings. We felt like we have two guys who might lead the league in innings pitched. And that does a lot, you know.
You mentioned, and either of you can take this question, you mentioned the schedule a second ago, the four lefties thing. And I've heard it get talked about more and more the last couple of years where people are thinking their last few picks, we're going to play the schedule game because you want to work the fab, you can drop them later, so on and so forth. How much do you really pay attention to that in the draft, or do you all of a sudden go, wait a minute, I'd rather have this guy, even though this other guy's schedule looks pretty good right now?
We talked about it. We both kind of looked at the schedule before we had our pre-draft meeting, and I've made a list of pitchers with, you know, with good matchups in the first couple of weeks and things like that. It's something that I'm trying to do more of. I hadn't even considered it probably before last year. And then last year, I don't think I got anybody like that, but I want to do it partly because of the ease in dropping them. One of the problems that I have, I know, is that, you know, you take the last, you know, six rounds or so, you take these upside plays or these guys that you really want, and you want on your team. And then it comes time to drop somebody and you just can't bear to drop them because you can't stomach the fact that they might break out on somebody else's team. So I think it helps because you can make, you know, you draft Martin Perez, gets a couple of matchups against Baltimore the first couple of weeks, and you have no problem dropping him. Yep. So I think that I'm going to try to do that more this year.
I like it. What about you, Robbie? You someone that focuses on that?
I've learned that you can utilize it. And so here's the thing, right? Obviously, we are a month out. So yep. There's risk in even trying to project if things are going to start off like they're going to start off, right? But at that point when it never became a guy like, you know, like we mentioned Dubon at the end of the draft too, like we just targeted Flores also for a multi-position and figured he's going to start off against those lefties too. Like, you know, and I know they added some pieces where he might not play all the time, but it's not like a guy we weren't considering, you know. It's like it never became a guy out of the blue where we say, hey, look at this schedule matchup. Let's draft this dud and hope he does well, you know. But I think it's something that I will, you know, try to take more, try to take advantage of it, especially when the season gets closer. I feel like it could be your first, you know, it could be your first dream. And that's what I learned playing in that main event. And my first main event was that first week was a first dream for a lot of players, even for first 2 weeks, you know. Again, even with the craziness of the schedule, you know, you can really take advantage of it.
No, definitely. Again, we've been drafting for a long time. Jenny's got going to Vegas for the mains, the super. Rob, you're going to New York for some mains. Those are the big ones. That's the ones if you have to pick one thing to win, those are probably them. So this last month now, all the work you've already put in, we'll start with you, Jenny. What's left? Like, what's the practicing? What's the studying? Like, what part of it? To for like people out there that haven't started even drafting yet and they're just kind of soaking in rankings and everything else, you guys have done a lot of work already. So what's left?
Yeah, for me, I did something different this year. Every year for the past several, I've attempted to look into every player. I try to go down the list of, you know, first, second, third, you know, all the way through the pitchers and try to at least get a short look at every player. And I didn't do that this year. And I think it's going to be good. I think that I've built myself up to a place where I have sort of this mental database of what these players can do. And I don't feel like I need that as much. So I've been able to spend more time actually drafting and getting a feel for the player pool that way. And, you know, if I see somebody going where I wouldn't have expected them to go, then that's an opportunity to go look at them further. But I don't necessarily need to do it for every single player. And I am spending more time trying to keep up with the news. And I'm going to try and keep up with lineups as much as possible and try and look at multiple resources for lineup, you know, opinions, and try and just stay on top of the current events as much as I can.
Yeah, that's a good one right now, because I've said it for a while. Last year, we had no news, and that made things very difficult. Like, there's already a bunch of news this year we never saw last year. So just every little thing you can gain is going to be huge. Spring training games are going to be huge. Like, is Alberto Mondesi going to hit the top? Or is Andrew Benintendi? Like, those are just little things that are going to go a long ways. Rob, what are you doing this last month? What's kind of your last prep?
Yeah, I think what Jenny said is, you know, the best. It's like, this is the time for the news. And which is why, you know, I think we put ourselves in good spots by, you know, starting early drafts, right? And getting these frame of references. And it spurs your player evaluation. And right now, if you're trying to do both, is where it gets, you know, like, really overwhelming. So, which is why it's really important to try to, you know, get your head into the forecaster, like, in December, like, even if it's just a couple pages here and there, and, you know, reading anything you can online, listening to podcasts, like, early is okay. Like, start making notes, start a Google Doc nice and early of, you know, players that you're noticing, like, are popping off to you, and then check the projection once they come out, like, all these things. So, because now you can just say, okay, let me just look at beat writers, right? Let me look at guys doing calisthenics on, you know. But, like, you can focus on that instead of now, because maybe some guy pops off in spring training and you're just getting into your play evaluation, and now you're comparing him to, like, nobody. You're just, like, saying, oh, this guy's hot, but then you don't know the context of the team and everything else that's going on. So I feel like that's super important to just, at this point of right now, to just be confident in where you are with player evaluations and draft strategy, and then so now you can just dive into the news, because, you know, there's a lot of things to dive into. And also with the news, too, I think it's just, you know, you have to be careful, you know, because the news isn't always, you know, prophecy either, you know. So it's like it's mining the news, but it's also mining the bullshit within the news, like, the, you know, the coach speak and all that. So, you know, just I'd rather be at that point right now where I can just focus more on that. And it's right now I'm winding up on a cut line draft and the last five rounds of a DC. And then I think I'm going to do like one more listener league, and then that's it. I'm just going to take off until those mains come.
I believe that when I see it.
I think there's still time too for people who are just starting to get in a slow draft. I mean, I think that a slow draft is a great way to prep, because you have time to look at your options. You know, you don't have to make that split second decision. So if you can still get in a slow draft, it's not a bad idea, because it lets you kind of prep on the fly.
Yeah.
Jenny, I think you talked me into a best ball draft.
You want to take one of mine? Because I got a bunch to fill. So
yeah, will you buy
it? Give me one. Pack? I'm on a 9-pack and I'm only drafting four of them. So yeah. I'm supposed to be drafting one as we speak, but it didn't fill. So maybe you should take one of mine.
Rob will be signing up after this.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll help fill the room, but I'd rather, you know, I'd rather just draft with you again. Like,
there we go. That's sweet. Now that was sweet, but now I want to hear some dirt here. So we're gonna have some fun. Jenny, you're in the Glarf League, like you mentioned, and our buddy Dave McDonald did a nice tweet thread of all the people in it and all this stuff today. So that was really cool. Now let's have some fun, Jenny. Who's the one person you have to beat in that league?
Well, it's got to be Dave, right? It has to be. You know, you need. It's so funny.
If you guys let Dave win that league, I might have to leave.
Twitter. I know. Let's just put it that way. Although he's taken on the job of commissioner, and anybody who wants to do that gets a tip of the hat from me, because I hate being the commissioner. Yep. So, you know, but you know, you have to. It's all in good fun, but you know, that's who you want to beat.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, Rob, you're in the Turf League. Who's the one person you have to beat in that league?
Oh, man. You know what?
He's too nice.
I am too nice.
He's not. I know it's in there.
I know it is, too.
I got to beat Matt. I got to beat Matty Williams. And I got to beat – and this is the fun one, because we'll have like a fun little bet. is Mendelsohn, my boy Mendelsohn.
Yeah, Mendy's good. Yeah, that'd be a fun one.
Yeah, because I know he can handle some good old, like, he's like me. Like, we'll do, like, gentleman trash talk, yeah, you know, and have fun with it. So, yeah, so those are the two guys I want to beat.
That'd be a good one.
No, but I want to beat everybody, too.
There you go. If you had to choose, Jenny, would you rather win your main event or finish top 10 in the overall?
I think it has to be top 10 in the overall. I mean, the
you'd probably win your main event if you're in the top 10. Yeah, but although, you know, I've seen weirder things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I finished, I think, 74th in the main event this year, and I was out of the money in my league. I finished fourth in my league. Yeah. So, you know, it happens. But, you know, I think the top 10, for me personally, I have, you know, I think I'm past this now a little bit, but in the past I've wanted to get a little bit of credibility. And, you know, I remember going in 2019 to the main event. It was not the Saturday morning one, but it was the Thursday one in Vegas. And I sat down and I introduced myself to John Pausma, who at the time was the defending main event champion. And, you know, he didn't know who I was, of course. And I said, you know, introduced myself. And he said, is this your first main event? And I said, no, I've been doing this for a few years. And then I see him on his laptop over there. And then 2 minutes later, he goes, oh, you did do pretty well last year. And I think that, you know, somehow that helps me get some credibility in the room, you know, to people just look straight at that overall. And if you can get a good overall finish, it gives you some, you know, some street cred.
Oh, it's true, because there's still a lot of people that give me a hard time because I don't do a lot of NFBC. So they think I don't know fantasy baseball. So it's fun. It's a fun conversation to be had. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Rob, who's the next, like, top guest you want on your show?
Oh,
Not that you have signed up already. Who is, like, the one, like, the unicorn?
Oh, the unicorn is because we haven't talked about it yet, but I'm definitely going to do it. Is actually, no, because it doesn't count, because
you already have him scheduled, don't you?
I wanted to have a Phil Toby, you know, a Phil Toby pod, just because.
How much time do you have?
Oh, we have time. Oh, we have time. I just I talked to them separately about it, but we haven't hammered it out, so that might have to be a thing. Yeah, I really want to do that. I know Zach did one, but that was like at the end of the year. So I want to do it like at the beginning of the year. And
well, your unicorn had to be the HQ guys, right? I mean, that was over the top. That was crazy.
I could hear you through the microphone. Like it was like the first day of school when you got your favorite teacher. Like you were just like you're right, taking notes the whole time. Which I'm not making fun of you for. You could hear it. Yeah.
But I actually have Pausma on the list to ask, because it's funny because, you know, I never seen him post anything on Twitter and he's never on. And then one day he popped on and he commented, you know, about how much he loved the podcast. And I was like super like taken over. I'm like, wow. It's like, you know, he took his one tweet of the month to like, you know, tweet to me. So I felt like pretty cool. I was like, wow, this is, you know, I felt like pretty cool that happened. So I reached out to him.
You win one overall championship.
Yeah, that's
what happens.
That's all you got to do. Then you could be a big bag of shit after that. But no, definitely not trying to do that. But no, like, I think we mentioned before, right? I'm like a Rose. I came out like a Rosarena. And
yeah, you went. Yes, you were a wrecking ball. Jenny, for the Reds, who finishes the season as a Red, Gray or Castillo?
I hope both. I mean, I don't feel like they're going to make any more trades. I don't think so. I don't know. I'm frustrated with what they've done, but I'm also, you know, it started to feel like it was going to get real bad. And then, you know, they just kind of got rid of some bullpen pieces and then stopped. So maybe it'll be okay. I mean, I think there's still a lot of promise this year. And if they're contending, I don't expect them to get rid of either one. I love having both of them.
I felt bad for you and like Clay Link and Jeff Erickson, all you Red fans, because I was actually rooting for everything they did last year. I'm like, they're competitive. Like, this is a good team. Like, what are you guys doing? Why are we doing this?
Like, this makes no sense. 160 game season and then just not try already. I mean,
yeah, that was horrible.
The window, and especially because the way that the playoffs went last year was so heartbreaking. I mean, to go two games and not score a run in extra innings, it was just so painful. The Reds have a very big, you know, track record of getting to the playoffs and then losing in the playoffs in like the most painful possible way.
I wasn't gonna bring it up. So
I was at one of, you know, they 2-0 coming home. I drove down to Cincinnati to go to game 4, I believe, and sit down in my seat and just immediate home run right over the wall, right by where I was. And it, I think it was a multi-run home run. I can't remember, but it was just heartbreaking. And then, you know, I'll forever be scarred by Johnny Cueto getting taunted by the Pittsburgh fans. That was so brutal. I mean, well, one game playoff is just,
those are tough.
It's cruel.
Those are tough in a game like baseball. Rob, what is the realistic, not your fanboy, expectation for the Mets this year?
90 wins.
Okay. How far do they go in the playoffs?
Non-fanboy, I would say realistic. I'll take 90 wins and one playoff round win.
The Dodgers are still the Dodgers, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like even if things go really well, they'll have to make some in-season moves to be on that level. Unless, like the ultimate, you know, coming together is Thor comes back and he's, you know, really good, you know, because that's just like picking up a mid-season trade for a top-notch pitcher. I'll be realistic. I say 90 wins. I'll take that as a fan. We're in the playoffs, and then we go with our staff, and we try to make a run.
All right. We had a listener's question from Simon P., and this is for Jenny. He would love to take the Reds insider on the closers battle. Like, what's your take on the closers battle between Sims and Garrett. Yes, Amir Garrett, who is honestly, I've always said closers got to be cuckoo in the head. If you want to take on a whole dugout, that classifies cuckoo in the head. So I respect the hell out of him. Mm-hmm. But how do you see that one playing out from like a fantasy standpoint?
Who knows? I mean, I was listening to Greg Jewett today on Cork Stats, I believe, and he was talking and he brought something up that I remember thinking about last year and I hadn't thought about it this year about the pitching coach, Derek Johnson, how he was in Milwaukee when they were screwing with Hader. And I think last year it probably didn't come up because Iglesias was so hell-bent on being the closer and was going to pitch a fit if he wasn't.
That's what happened.
So, you know, I think they're in a position this year where they have multiple guys and they're going to use multiple guys. And as a fan, I'm totally fine with that. That's what a smart team should be doing. Yeah. So I'm cool with it. I'm just probably not going to draft them. I mean, there's that late part where all that's left are guys that are part-time closers, and that's fine. If I had to choose one, I'd choose Garrett just because at this point he seems like the best chance for saves, but I'm not putting in much hope for any of them becoming the full-time closer.
Yeah, I could see a lot of situational things going on with those two. And they're not very expensive, especially Sims. He's going late, but I do love Garrett on Twitter, just like talking trash basically about being the closer and stuff. It's fun banter there. Another question from Simon. Stevenson, do you think he gets enough playing time this year to be viable?
I mean, I'm not a prospects person for starters, so I can't give you a ton about his particular skills, but I can tell you that he is a rarity in terms of, you know, I believe righty catcher. And, you know, there aren't a lot of them that come out and are do something great. So I hope he does. But I've always been a Tucker Barnhart defender. You know, I think that he, for the Reds, brings a lot of good qualities. So, I mean, I think they could share time. I'm not going to draft Stevenson just because I'm not going to draft a part-time closer who we don't even know yet if he's good. I mean, at the major league level. So I just don't draft that way. I'm not somebody who takes my closers in the last rounds. I mean, my catchers. So, you know, it's not for me, but I hope he's great.
Yeah. And then lastly, give us one fantasy sleeper, one fantasy bust from the Reds.
I would have said Shogo, but I'm not going to anymore. I like Jesse Winker. I think he has a good chance to break out and really take control of one of the outfield positions. So I would like to see him be able to do that. And what was an overdrafted person? A bust?
A bust, yeah.
It could. I don't know. I don't feel like they're – who's getting drafted too high?
It's basically Castillo, Suarez, and Gray are like the only high picks, but they're not that high. Well, Castillo –
yeah, I like Suarez where he's going, and I like Castillo where he's going. So it's hard to pick a bust that's going late, you know? I mean, you could say Garrett because I don't think that he's going to be the full-time closer, but I don't have a great answer for that one.
Well, I have a fun one for you. Who has a better fantasy season, Joey Votto or Miguel Cabrera?
Oh, probably Miggy. I love, like, Joey Votto likes to talk a lot about what he's going to do and then may or may not do it. So I hope so, but I think he's a good pick where he's going in drafts right now, and I like both of them. But, you know, I mean, now I'm starting to think maybe Votto because he actually has a position, but I'm assuming that Miggy might, you know, will get first base eligibility. I don't actually know the theory on that, but I'm going to switch. I'm going to say Votto because of first base.
All right, Rob, you had a list in front of you you wanted to talk about. The floor is yours.
I listened to the episode you had me on your podcast on New Year's Eve, and we talked about New Year's resolutions that we would do for fantasy. So it's interesting. I wanted to know how you were doing on this list. So
I don't even remember what they all were, so now I'm scared. So
your first one was, you know, being on famine, you know, Andrew McCutchen, because you love – because at that point when I was listening, they were at like 110 and 220 ADP when we did it. So how are you doing on that?
I have a ton of Andrew McCutchen.
Okay, I knew that. I knew you wouldn't stray from that. You had an obligation to not overdraft Gausman.
I have zero shares of Kevin Gausman.
Bam, two for two. The other one was Passover Teoscar for Lourdes Gurriel every time.
I have neither one of them because Gurriel went up. Like after we talked, they're almost the same, or he might be going above Teoscar in certain drafts. So I have zero of either one.
Okay. All right.
But I'm still a believer that Gurriel has a better year than Teoscar.
Okay. All right. The fourth one was you smashing Goldie and Rizzo every chance you could where they were.
I would. I have none of them, but I would.
You need to get in on that. Those are some good ones.
Well, what I've been waiting for is I somehow miss them, and I get Josh Bell and Rhys Hoskins everywhere like five times later.
Yeah.
So it's not a purposeful thing because I think those two are going to just ridiculous prices right now. It's stupid. I'm talking about Goldschmidt and Rizzo. They're going at horrible prices for their talent level.
Yeah, right, 100%. And I love where Hoskins is going. I totally agree with that. Your fifth one was that you said you would make it, you know, make sure you get as much as Cole, Giolito, and Castillo. Like you wanted to walk away from your draft with one of those guys in every draft.
Top of my head, I'm pretty sure I have at least one of them in every draft. If not, I've double dipped. I'm pretty sure I've gotten at least one of them in every draft. Yeah,
cool. Sure. And you mentioned that too, like possibly doing a full house when you had the opportunity. Yes. When it aligned perfectly, you said
so. That'd be phenomenal.
Okay. All right, so you're doing pretty good. You're doing pretty
so far, good. So good. We'll see. It's the quote unquote real drafting starts.
You're doing
soon.
Better than me because I said I was going to be bold and try a Mondesi build, and I haven't done that.
There's still time, Rob. There's still time.
And got that main event coming. You're in on that.
Yeah. Phil wouldn't care.
Yeah, they'll be like this. They'll be like, you know, what kind of pick was that? It was on my resolution list, all right?
I had to fulfill it.
another one, too, was a try a Vladdy build, and I still haven't done that one either. So the no police act, though, is infirm. That's infirm check. Get Kyle Tucker's. Yeah, that's pretty good, too. And the other one was get all the Giolitos, and that's 100% true, so.
You've gotten me on Giolito before. I'm not happy about that, but
you've become like the Giolito guy, I think.
Giolito's. I've already said he'll be in that top three conversation. 100%.
I have him as SP3. Yep.
Yeah, he's up there next year. Jenny, since we basically talked about who we're in love with, what are some of your like main targets early in drafts?
Well, interestingly, we ended up in the tag team draft getting both of our guys because I was on Nola and he's on Giolito. So we were able to get both of them, which was nice. We didn't have to argue over which one to take. But let's see, who else do I have a lot of? I like getting Goldschmidt a lot. I have a lot of Presley. I have a lot of Gene Segura.
Yes. I like that. I like Segura a lot.
I have.
He fell to a great spot for us in that draft.
Yeah, for Jenny, sure.
He was one of those guys where we were like, come on, baby, come on, come on. Like, you know, like, and it was perfect.
Yeah. I have a lot of like Stephen Piscotty. I like those like Kanha, Piscotty type, you know, outfielders. I get a lot of those guys. And that's all I can think of.
Okay. Well, I could sit and chat with you guys all night, but it's getting late, especially for you two. So I'm going to wrap
up my bedtime.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap it up here. Cool. But I'm having a blast chatting them up, and we'll do it again sometime. But before we leave, Jenny, let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter and whatever good stuff you want to spill out there.
Yeah, on Twitter, I am Jenny Butler 830. It's my birthday. And just because I had to figure out something, I used to have a strange Twitter handle that was not identifiable, and I had to change it because I named it after my cat just because I was first getting on Twitter many years ago, and then I realized that I needed to get off of that because my cat's name was Lucy, and people started calling me Lucy, so I had to get out of that. So it's just Jenny Butler 830. Come talk to me there. That's pretty much the best way to find me.
What about you, Rob? Plug away.
Twitter at Deadpool Hitter. I also have a page of the pod at Pull Hitter Pod. Website pullhitter.com. Yeah, you know, trying to get out some episodes with a whole range of guests. A lot of people, you know, have mentioned to me that it seems to have like a niche show, but I've been doing a ton of different things. And Bubba, you know, I just want to say something you mentioned earlier in the show about, you know, playing in NFBC or playing in a regular league. I think it's a great competition in NFBC, 100%. But I also feel like it doesn't mean if you don't play in that you're not good. Like, 100%. Like, there's great players everywhere in the world. And some of them don't play NFBC. Some, like, we're really good at, you know, winning your home league or whatever, you know. So, yeah, I'm with you with that. I think that's like a garbage thing. But thank you for having me, Bubba, and me and Jenny. It was cool to talk about the tag team draft, and it's always I'm always grateful to come on the show. I think I always tell you that every time we talk that you really helped me through this industry a ton, and I'm always grateful for that.
No problem. Absolutely. At all. I'm looking forward to having you guys both on after you win the tag team, because then I'll start throwing some haymakers. It'll be fun. But until then, everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 346. Rob, can you take us away?
Don't be a bag of shit.
See you later.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.